Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, the Market Musings podcast with Doc Holliday. So welcome back again, Doc. It's good to have you, but I'm a little bit worried, to be honest, on this one, because before we started the podcast, you told me that you were all fired up and angry as you'd just been on the phone to a certain broker. So I'm a little bit scared. I'm glad that we're not face to face, but you know, you're very welcome and I'm mentally prepared.
Thank you, mate. It's good to be here. And look, that broker was Hargreaves Lansdown. They've had a terrible reputation of late. I think they're struggling, as I'm sure many, many people are, because of COVID-19. But things have got really, really bad there. I mean, I used them for a lot of years, and it's such a shame. So if anybody, any of my followers or listeners or your audience are interested in opening an account with Hargreaves Lansdown, I would think about it again.
Yeah, okay. Hi, Doc. Yeah.
Hey, mate. How are you?
Good to have you back on. Yeah, I think I've heard a few stories of Hargreaves Lansdown shutting down accounts of long-term, you know, people that have been with them, you know, 10, 12, 15 years. Just, I think they're having a cull of people that are maybe not been profitable for them and just moving them on. Must admit, I've been with them probably since about 2007, 2008 or something like that. Not a massive portfolio, but it's growing. But fortunately, I've not been binned yet, but I do.
It's, listen, Kenny, it's not binning that's the issue. It's best execution. So it's situations like Hargreaves took a massive role in when Royal Mail or whatever it was, the post office as I refer to it, did their IPO. They took a big responsibility on with that one. And then what happened on the day of the float, because of the demand and all of the problems, they got rushed with all of these new requests. And they couldn't cope with it, and it crashed their accounts, and it meant people who were trading in anything other than the Royal Mail were massively disadvantaged. And that happened, and it was like, well, it was just a one-off situation. And then, you know, when COVID-19 kicked off, you know, I was trying to buy shares in blue chip companies, and I couldn't get best execution. It was, you know, it was 11 quid to 11.20 for shares in Shell, and they were sort of showing a price of 11.70. And, you know, when you're talking about big blue chip companies, that shouldn't be happening. Mm-hmm. And I think the same things happened when we're now referring to it as Vaccine Monday. When Pfizer come out and talked about the vaccines, a lot of these COVID stocks collapsed. These are obviously very popular with clients and with the secondary market. Retailers love them. And therefore, they're all trying to rush to the doors, or they're trying to buy shares because they think they're cheap, depending on what your point of view is. And they can't get any quotes. And that's not a good place to be when you feel like you've got a lot of money invested and you can't even get logged into your account. I mean, that's a problem. But yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. There are lots of accounts getting closed down too for a bundle of different reasons, but it's just frustrating. And I'm sure there's loads and loads of listeners out there that have had the same problems with other providers. And I guess we've just got to accept that as part of the way it works.
They may have done. I mean, I had a problem with HR getting quotes, and I used to be with II, Interactive Investor, and I never had a problem. And actually, I remember with II, the execution price was usually pretty good, from what I remember. But HL, yeah, a number of times I've tried to either buy or sell, and it's just not even a price available. You'd have to, are you even a broker? Because I can't even execute. And I'm not even talking thousands and thousands of pounds, you know. They're you know, sort of smaller trades than some people might do. Yeah, can't get a quote, and the price you get is not actually very good anyway. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe they've got too big.
I think McKenny and I had a conversation about it not long ago, Mark, and I think what happens is, you know, lots of people aren't aware that if you're trading in sort of an ISA, or you're trading on spread bet, then you're not worrying about the tax implications. But if you're trading in a standard Vantage trade account or whatever it might be called at Hargreaves Lansdown, and you're paying tax at the end of the year and all these other things, all of this stuff, you know, trading fees can be written off against your tax, assuming that you're profitable. So if you're consistently profitable, you get what you pay for, and if you go to another provider and you pay a little bit more, you'll get a better service, and it's an absolute fact. And if you can write that off then against your tax, really there should be no reason why people who are making good returns in the market aren't trading in other areas away from HL. I was a bit of a stickler for it. I liked to do my business there because I felt that, you know, I was able to sort of blend in with the scenery and just, you know, stay under the radar. But unfortunately, it got to the point where it's not working, and it's disappointing to hear that you're not having a great experience either.
Mm.
Yeah, that kind of brings on to the conversation about level two as well. I mean, I must admit, I mean, I always used to love ADVFN's level two, but I don't love the price that they charge a month. So, I go for LSE, which is the kind of probably the middle of the road, sort of 22, 23 quid a month. But even that's been falling over sort of regularly, sort of 8 to 8.45, you know, at least a couple of days a week now as well. So, yeah, it's I don't know if it's maybe if it's COVID and people at home, they don't have the IT infrastructure in place. Yeah. I don't know. I think we're going to have to wait till we return to semi-normality before we can judge some of these companies. But definitely a lot of these platforms are having problems with various parts of their offerings. So, yeah, we just sometimes...
Well, you know, I had a conversation with a provider recently who approached me and said, you know, would you be interested in doing a promotion with us, and my two simple requests were, I'm not interested in referral commissions, I'm not interested in being paid to promote your product or whatever it might be that these guys were proposing, and I'm sure it happens a lot. What I said is, I want you to rebate the user the discount, and that's become a big problem. It's a shame, because I think these guys have got some great tech, and they've got great infrastructure, and it perhaps doesn't look as great at the surface, but I've been trialing it myself, and the data's superb from what I can see, or certainly from my limited interaction with it, because I don't kind of look at the screens as much as I used to. But sadly, you know, the cost of these level two platforms are really expensive. And, you know, what I was saying is, I've kind of made my money in the market. I don't need to get a couple hundred quid off referrals and stuff like that. I'd rather somebody who's starting out who looks at 50, 60 quid and says, fucking hell, that's a lot of money, and they can get a 15, 20% discount and save 20 quid. They'll benefit from it a whole lot more than me. And it's just a shame that we've not been able to move things forward. But I do think there's a massive hole for people to get data. But, you know, there are sites like IG Index. If you trade a lot with IG, they'll give you live prices and the RSP. So for anybody out there who might be doing lots of trades with IG and they're not aware of it, it's there. If you go to Hargreaves Lansdown, as much as we've bitched about the product, if you trade or your size of trades hit a certain point, there's an option where you can opt for live pricing. And if not, I think there's a small fee to pay. So most of these service providers will give you live pricing or something really cheap, like really cheap. It's just not that great, but you know, it's a necessary component if you're day trading or intra week trading. That's for certain.
It's another idea for a podcast, Doc. Every time you open your mouth, I seem to scribble things down. So we've got the stock picking for 2021. So we need to think about that in the next couple of weeks. And then, and you know, you could spend a whole podcast talking about different platforms, different brokers, you know, and different offerings that these various platforms give you. So, I mean, there's a whole scope for a podcast there. Now I'll probably learn tons as well, because there is so much data available out there that most people don't know about it. So no, I've scribbled that down. So you're digging a hole for yourself here, but that's fine. It gives us content.
The Christmas special can be all about how to trade.
Badly.
Badly.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm not kidding. Yeah, right. We've not even talked about the markets yet. We're 10 minutes in. It's so we have our Friday lunchtime. It seems to be kind of regular slot now for our chats, which is fine. I'm going to say it's the end of the week, but it just, I don't know, I've kind of lost weekends now. It just feels like since I've left working life, you don't have that sort of Friday feeling anymore. The days just kind of blur into a day, really. And it you know, it doesn't, and the wife's obviously not working at the moment either. And you know, every day is a sort of weekend for her. I hope she doesn't hear me. But you know what I mean? It's just, doesn't feel like a weekend anymore. It's really bizarre. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting to that stage in life, getting old. Don't know.
Well, that's the view of the working class man, isn't it? You get to Friday afternoon and it's, let's go for the pub, have a couple of pints, let's get home and have a Chinese, let's do all these things. It's like you're celebrating the end of the week. And I suppose in this game, people don't seem to do it. But what you should do is definitely celebrate some of the wins that you have in the market or in the week. So, you know, you've had a successful week, you've done loads of podcasts, Mark. Then, you know, it was great. You had some good news last time we were chatting and you were having pizza and champagne. There should be a time in the week where you just sort of drop everything, sit together, enjoy yourselves. And you've got to find sometimes, just, you know, manufacture reasons, but you shouldn't, you should never be in a situation where you've got nothing to look forward to. It's a pretty grim outlook.
No, I said I'd nothing to look forward to. I just said the days seem to, it's just a day. So I think it's an age thing. I'm older than you, Doc. I'm definitely older than Mark.
Yeah, I think you're getting grumpy and miserable and old.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely fat as well. But I think what's actually wrong with me, so I mean, I was trying to keep it reasonably quiet, but I'm on a diet at the moment and I've not had any alcohol since last Friday. So I'm almost coming up in a week with no alcohol, which is pretty much...
But I thought you were on this... Didn't you start this diet weeks ago? Did it lapse?
I started one. That was probably about 2 or 3 months ago, but... The drink always grabs me back, but no. So I attend a weekly weigh-in, shall we say? And my weigh-in's tomorrow, so we'll see how we get on. But I mean, it's pretty extreme. So it is. It's pretty much like 800 to 1,000 calories a day. So we'll maybe.
It's that old scene, isn't it? It's that old joke, isn't it? Well done, Deborah, at the back. She's got a pound on this week, but let's give her a round of applause. You know what I mean? People clap for people who don't even lose weight at those things. Give me your money, we'll clap for you.
There's a whole Peter Kay sketch about that, so as it's class. So as it's absolutely brilliant. But right, let's go on the markets, because like that's 15 minutes in and we've not even talked about a stock yet. So the first thing I'd scribbled down was the copper price. Obviously, that's probably about it's at a 7 or 8 year high now. I think it's like $7,350 a ton.
And obviously, it's flying, isn't it? And the thing is a lot of people have jumped onto this whole, you know, EV, renewable energy, you know, green energy, and they're all getting into that now. And what people are not realizing is for all of these, you know, for the likes of Volvo who come out and said we won't make another petrol engine after 2030 or whatever the date was, and there's other companies that have done it since. What none of these guys realise is that there's got to be a huge demand for copper, and we already had a huge demand for copper. So it doesn't surprise me that we're at this situation. I'm sure there'll be a bit of a pullback, but it's flying, and there's some great opportunities out there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, one of your bankers, if you want to call it that, Doc's Chesterfield Resources, and obviously copper prices is good for them, but obviously they had some interesting news during the week as well. I'll give you a drum roll if you want. Or you can just go straight in, because that was quite an interesting RNS, must admit. And it's split by my net.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, Chesterfield was a company that I've talked a lot about for a couple of years. I've got a big relationship with Cyprus, as most people who've you know, follow me or know me, they know that I spend a lot of time out there. I love the island. So when I was informed that a company were going to be out there and they were going to be doing some mining and drilling for copper, I was enthused to want to get involved. The island has been renowned for copper historically. You know, the name Cyprus is Cyprium. It's Latin. It's to do with the Roman Empire. So they reckon that, you know, the vast majority, the rump of the Roman Empire, copper and gold and brasses and all these things came from Egyptian slaves in Cyprus. And huge areas have been mined away. And there was a mine there called the Limni Pit, which had produced, I think it was something like 8 million tons of copper, but it was argued that it was more like 16, but they'd only actually declared the 8 based on the land mass and whatnot. Anyway, Chesterfield had gone out there. They got some licenses literally within a stone's throw from the Limni Pit. So we're talking 1, 2, 3 kilometres, very close proximity, closeology, and very, very similar geology. So when I went out there, first thing I saw when I got out of this pickup truck was a load of pyrite on the floor and slag. And basically, when the Romans had been able to get the ore, they would smelt it on site where they found it, so there was no moving it around, and then they would take out the copper. And what was left hit the decks, and there was a small spoil of soil over the top of it. And literally, when we got there, as soon as they scraped that back with a dozer, you could see it. And it was littered. There's areas of Cyprus where it's just littered. And the argument here is, as soon as you get undercover within about 50 meters, you're hitting this huge amounts of mineralization and arguably a lot of copper. Now, there's been lots of suggestion from lots of people for a long time that there's no copper there. They've had some great drilling results, or certainly the indicators for mineralization has been exceptional. over the summer. They've gone on a drilling campaign that's just coming to an end now. There should have been perhaps some assay results, and people have said to me, look, we expected to get some news. We've not had that news. You know, are you concerned? And I sort of said, well, I was out there 6-8 weeks ago. I went up to site, had a chat to some of the guys, took some pictures and videos and shared them on social media. But there's a situation in mining where getting assay results done is taking longer. And it's not just affecting this company, it's affecting the industry due to COVID. So yeah, I'm not panicked, but I'll be honest, I stopped talking a lot about Chesterfield because I was thinking, you know, that time now is getting, I'm starting to get worried. Did I see things wrong, or is there perhaps something gone wrong that I'm not aware of? So I was trying to be, you know, as conservative as I possibly could, because the shares have gone from 2p to 10p, and I don't want to sort of be guiding the market the wrong way. Lo and behold, Polymetals, a FTSE 100 company, have just gone and took 22.5% of the business. They've done it on a 9p valuation. The company intends to raise another 400,000 quid with existing investors just to give them the opportunity. Shares have absolutely skyrocketed. I had a quick chat with the company, and I've got to take my hat and doff it to Martin French. I mean, Martin and I have had some interesting conversations over the years. We don't agree on everything all of the time, predominantly because I'm a bit of a gobshite, but he's absolutely done a sterling bit of work here with sitting down with Polymetals and getting them to go and take a big, big chunk of the company. And if that's not an endorsement for copper in Cyprus, with the history that's been there, by having a FTSE 100 company in, I have no idea what is. I expect now that should these results echo what we believe from the percussion drill results that we'd had earlier in the summertime, which showed that there were huge areas of mineralization. If the diamond drill backs up what that has already shown us, and given the confidence with having Polymetals on board now, additional cash on the balance sheet, if it doesn't go on, you know, on a bonza move from here, I'd be very, very surprised. I guess there's a little bit of news needed still, but great work by the team at Chesterfield and to the technical lads on the ground, because I think when I was there in August, it was 43 degrees one day and they were drilling. So that's not a nice environment to be in.
No. I mean, the bizarre thing with Cyprus as well, and correct me if I'm wrong, now I can't remember what program I was watching. It might have actually been Top Gear. They actually get snow in Cyprus as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, the Trudos Mountains, they'll be getting snow on the caps now. It's about 2.2 times the height of Ben Nevis. So, you know, you're talking about 6,500 metres or something like that, or feet, rather. There's a ski resort up there.
There was definitely Top Gear, because they raced down the mountain. They took cars, hired cars up there, put sort of skis on them, and raced them down the mountain. You know, it was just bizarre. Because I've been to Cyprus once, but obviously it was Ayia Napa. I was there when I was a bit younger, and that was just mental. But I don't know if I'll be going back to Ayia Napa now. It's quite bizarre. You think, you know, an island in the middle of the Med, and it's got a ski resort at top of the hills. But
well, the crazy thing about it is you can go, and I did this in March 2019. Is you can go up to the ski resort, you can have you can have a little wander around there, you can have yourself something to eat, and then you can come down and you're literally sitting on the beach and it's sunny at 20-odd degrees or 20 degrees. So, yeah, it's a great spot. These guys have worked through some difficult conditions over the summer. They had a company come in working with the technical guys. Mike Parker, who followed on from Mike Green, who founded the company, he was at First Quantum. He'd had two major discoveries in Congo. And I remember, you know, a year ago people saying, oh, you know, this tiny little company, it's you know, it's got no chance. There's no commercial mining's, you know, ground to a halt in copper in Cyprus. It's not going to happen. It's bullshit. And you know what? Mike Parker, the minute I sat down with him, he said to me, look, I've worked in a small team in the Congo with the same situation. And if the geology is there and it's right, you know, we'll find it. And I'm not saying that they've had a great big find yet, because you know you still need confirmation from results, and drilling results will give a lot more data. But I think the Polymetals gang coming in now, I think whether they have a big strike in the next pending few weeks from the diamond drill that they've been doing over the summer, whether they have a major strike now or whether it be something in the future, I honestly believe that those guys have not gone and sunk money into this business in a tiny little minnow. if they don't confidently believe that there's big legs on this. So it's one of those, it's come a long way. I called it originally 4 or 5p. It was something like 14, 15p yesterday. It did go as low as 2. Been a massive opportunity and payday for people who were confident to get behind it.
Yeah, definitely. And you kind of touched on it being a tiny minnow. So going from a tiny minnow to a big giant mark, Rolls-Royce. I think you, you talked about Rolls-Royce last week, and I think you've done pretty well out of that, didn't you?
It's mental, isn't it? I mean, that was. I think you put a comment up, didn't you, Doc? It's trading like an AIM share, and it really was. I mean, I thought we spoke about it last time we spoke, which is going to be 2 weeks ago, and yeah, I said maybe I made a rookie mistake and perhaps didn't buy in the right sort of time or whatever, but you sort of said no, it's a good investment, it'll do well, and lo and behold, you know, a week later it's up over £1, you know, sitting today at just £1.10. So I mean, yeah,
you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it, Mark. And you know, the thing is, I suppose it was so sort of such a negative narrative out and a bit of glumness around the market at that point when we did the podcast a couple of weeks ago. But we talked about Rolls Royce. You absolutely nailed that. We talked about Shell and BP, saying that, you know, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. I mean, the shares today, I think, in Rolls Royce are nearly 13 quid. You know, we were talking about these. I was buying these under tenner. You know, under 9 quid. Mm-hmm. And to think that in the space of a couple of weeks, Rolls-Royce rocketed, BP and Shell rocketed. You know, you can buy you can go and buy £100,000 worth of shares in this, and it's one click in, it's one click out. You've not got the arse-ache of trying to buy, negotiate a trade and sell and all of that sort of stuff you do with the small cap. So, yeah.
Are you in and out then? I suppose I could have stayed in for the longer term, but I decided, no, look, you know, I'm taking my capital gain and leaving. Did you do the same with yours?
Mostly. Yeah. I mean, BP went out the door. I kept back 30%, but they've gone. Okay. I've got a little bit of Shell left. I've got a longer term view with both Shell and BP. So I'm playing a bit of a dangerous game where I think, you know, should we have one of these sort of wobbly days in the market, or should oil slow down a bit? Because oil's had a massive move from sort of 41, 42 to, you know, almost 50 bucks. If it slows down and it catches a breath and these things pull back, I'll be going back. Well, my intention is to buy them all again. Yeah. So I look at Rolls-Royce at 11.50, even under 12 quid. 11, 12 quid, if you can buy them, absolute steal. I want to try and hold these for the long term. But like you say, it's difficult when you're seeing 40% gains on decent summer cash. It's hard not to take, isn't it, in a couple of weeks?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of blue chip chatter on Twitter. I mean, Tesco seems to be quite popular as well. We've now seen quite a few of the usual suspects putting a bit of money into Tesco, so it must be that time of year again when people start looking at food retailers for the sort of Christmas rush. It's definitely something that whenever I get the time, whenever God invents 36 hours in a day or whatever, I can certainly have a look at these things. But what I always want to talk about is a virtuous circle. Everybody knows what a vicious circle is, but a virtuous circle is one that kind of the head feeds the tail. And my virtuous circle is the Victoria Goldfields, in particular ECR Minerals, and then obviously the Powstroke Red Rock joint venture. And I had this kind of spider diagram scribbled out of all the different scenarios that sort of could pan out in that region. But there's so many connotations. I mean, for any listener that doesn't follow the ECR Minerals or the Pow Red Rock story, ECR Minerals has approximately a 1,000 square kilometre footprint in the Victoria Goldfields. Pow and Red Rock have got a joint venture in there. It's about 2,300, and they pretty much surround each other. And obviously, I mean, I think we can see it. I mean, it's been rumoured for a while that Newmont were interested in, you know, ECR's Creswick project. There's obviously interest in the Baileyson project. And I was trying to think in my head, you know, so let's say somebody does do a joint venture for Creswick and it is Newmont. You know, what are the connotations for Pow and Red Rock round about it? And then obviously there was a bit of land released for whatever reason round about the Ballarat mine. And along with two or three other companies. You've got ECR and the joint venture with applications in there as well. So it's a right hotbed of activity. And I'm just wondering what the first, you know, the first domino is going to fall and start off this
Well, I don't think it matters, does it? Because I think we talked about this. If we go back to the olden days when you were first in the markets, or, you know, anybody who was around when GKP, you know, was doing the business in the Middle East, or you've got the likes of Rockhopper and the likes down in the South Atlantic, when one starts to have a hit, everything around it goes up. It's like a reflective hit. So, you know, yeah. should Power or Red Rock or one of those companies get, you know, sign a strategic partnership or something like that, I'm sure it'll benefit ECR maybe a little bit less because there's an argument over size. Well, I mean, Power's come a long way. But, you know, the thing with ECR, they go and do that deal with the third largest mining company, which is at worst of the CEO, and you can't get that past the Nomad unless there's some validity to it. Then, you know, you're going to see these companies around it go up. So it's a winner-winner chicken dinner in that area. And I think ECR and, you know, arguably Red Rock and Power have come a long way. ECR's come up a bit. You know, whichever one you fancy, I'm sure there's some opportunity for you and value there. I've obviously taken ECR. I know Mark likes it too.
Yeah.
I think it's cheap at 2p. It keeps telling us that when it goes under 2p, buyers come in. When it gets up to 2.5p, it kind of softens. But eventually, you're gonna get that news that says that there's a big deal been done and it's off to the races. This is one of them where if it's 2p today, if it all goes horribly wrong, it crashes and the gold price goes to rat shit or whatever, it's going back to a penny, penny and a quarter, penny and a half. If it works out, potentially going to 10p plus, on a binary basis, it's a screaming opportunity. That's just my view.
Do you think it's... because there's this sort of saying the market always prices it in, you know, and if we've heard so much that there's a deal pretty much there, but it hasn't happened yet, are we just waiting for that, you know, the actual confirmation to come through before it goes? Do you think that's what the catalyst is going to be?
Listen, you know, you can't price in a deal with somebody like that. If you look at the price action in Chesterfield, it jumped up 40-50%.
Mm.
It's slowed down a little bit now. It's slowed down because there's not that much stock around. There's obviously people who bought it on the lows, so there's a bit of profit taking and there's obviously a bit of churn. Mm. We've seen the same with ECR. When it come up, there were some warrants going out. There was a little bit of indigestion just because people are taking some off the table. But honestly, if you go and look at Greatland or you go and look at some of these other companies that have done deals with majors, you know, you don't price it in at 40%, 30% gain. There's just so much more to go. And that's why I think, you know, in that case, if they do that deal on that asset, I'd be very surprised if it doesn't go up bangers. But, I mean, who knows? You could be right. Mm. I just think from experience, no, it's going to go a lot further if they do that deal.
Yeah, obviously ECR, they've just, they put out that update, I think it was last week, and they've got the drill rig in the country now, and they've got their office, and they've got like a big shed. So, I mean, obviously they can start storing their own core and, you know, doing a lot of the work themselves. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting 2021. And obviously Pow and Red Rock, the joint venture's a bit further behind because they've not got any granted licenses, but, you know, that's going to happen soon. You know, I think they're inbound. They fast track three licenses to the granted stage, and then, you know,
I mean, if you were an investor in Power and Red Rock, and you were sitting there knowing that you've got licenses coming in the neighbouring acreage, and companies, whether it be ECR or anybody else on the ground, are starting to sign partnership and joint venture agreements and all the rest of it. I mean, what a place to be, because that is exactly where you want to be. You want to be sitting there knowing that you've got licenses coming in. And you know what? We might not have to go through 1, 2, 3, 4 years of waiting to get some value out, because if they start doing deals next door, it's only a matter of time before they come knocking on the door. And I'm sure that's where you are as a Pow shareholder. And I'm sure that's why the shares in both of those companies are doing okay at the minute.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. It's an interesting scenario. And, you know, and it will kick off. There's going to be a catalyst, and we could guess, we could have 10 guesses each, and we'll probably be wrong. It'll be something silly will start it off, you know. I think it always, you know, nobody sees it coming, and then they just reflect or feed off each other, and away we go.
Well, so, what do you guys think of sticking with Australia and gold, like Panther Metals? Because they've just
Dazzler has done a sterling job, hasn't he?
Dazzler, yeah. I like Dazzler, he's all right. Dazzler? Yeah, but have you seen the licenses they recently picked up in the Laverton area?
No, I didn't. No, come on, tell us.
Oh, you want to have a look? You want to just go to Google Maps and search for Laverton, WA, as in, you know, Western Australia. It looks like the surface of Mars, but, you know, you zoom in, and I've never seen satellite imagery as good quality as they are in that area. I don't know why. Maybe it's because there's so much going on there. Because when you start to look into the area where DASA has picked up the licenses, it is surrounded by serious gold mines. There's one called Granny Smith, one called Sunrise Dam, and these mines have got their own airports. You know, they've got a little, not just an airstrip, an actual tarmac airport. You know, with a small kind of, you know, not terminal building, but, you know, it's a proper infrastructure. And you look around a bit more and you see little villages that have started that are just for the, you know, the operations in the area, in the mining. They've got tennis courts and, like, you know, shops and that kind of thing. And it literally, it's like, looks like it's in the middle of surface of Mars. And I've liked Panther for, you know, quite a while. I like Darren a lot. I think he's a decent bloke. I think his Canada stuff is pretty decent. But what's really got me interested recently is this new application, this new acquisition they've picked up in Laverton. I think it's really in a good place.
I know you like the company. Sorry, Kenny, to jump in here, but one thing I'd say that Darren's done is he's shown up a lot of these small cap directors of companies that are running these lifestyle companies that are, you know, pissballing about, quaffing on the luncheon circuit around the city. He's made an absolute mockery of him because, you know, by his own admission, Darren is not got a great extensive mining background, but he's got a background to being able to, you know, make a bob or two, you know, turn a buck. He's got a background of being able to build businesses, and he's come from where he's come from into this game. He's got taken this responsibility and role on, which is huge, I think, given his background. He's knuckled down, got stuck in, and what a great result he's having so far. Out of all of the people out in the market, he's one of the few that I really want to see go on and do well, because he's got the work, he's got the work ethic, he's got the right people around him. He understands, you know, where his limitations are in certain areas, and he makes sure he has the right people around him. Absolutely thrilled for him, and if you're a shareholder, Mark, in Panther, good on you, because I think it's certainly moving in the right direction. Good news.
Mm. Yeah. I think the key point of that acquisition, Mark, was there was actually two acquisitions. So there was the acquisition they got from, I think it was at White Cliff Minerals, I think was the name of the ASX company. And they also acquired a sort of secondary group of licenses. I can't remember the name of the other company, but what it basically does is it forms this sort of contiguous block of licenses, sort of north to south. And to be honest, it seems cheap as chips as well. When you look at some of the, I mean, I scroll through some of the historic releases, as I do, because I'm quite a nosy bugger, and there's just a shed load of data, and they seem to have let it go. Maybe it's not core to them anymore. I don't know. Sometimes you wonder, why do these companies, you know, it looks quite an interesting project, you know, why have they let it go so cheaply? And it must be just that, I mean, you'll laugh at this, but there's a sketch show in Scotland, and the key word for it is good guy wank. And sometimes I think these guys at the board, and they say, right, we've got to get rid of a project, and that's what they do. They just go good guy wank, and regardless of whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, they just get rid of it.
I never knew you had your own sketch shows in Scotland.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'll send you later, Doc. No, it's chewing the fat, it's called, and it's good guy wank. It's everybody in Scotland knows about it. And people are probably saying, what is he talking about? But no, it's everybody knows about it. It's one of these things, you know, you meet somebody or a group of guys you've not seen for a while, and I'll just walk up and go, good guy, wank, and point to him, you know, and it's just a greeting. You know, nobody takes offence.
Right.
Darren
said to me on an interview that he said something like, it takes maybe three or four owners of a project to actually, you know, develop it somewhat, you know, and you can kind of get that if someone's been on there for a while and has you know, maybe not found what they want to found, or they've got a bit stuck in their ways or whatever. It's always good, isn't it, to have a fresh pair of eyes come in with a, perhaps a different idea. And he said that, yeah, it sometimes takes 2, 3, or 4 owners of a project to actually find it and prove it up.
Yeah, we don't know what the real reasons are. It might have just been, it might have been cash constraints.
Yeah.
You know, they may have been quite happy to get rid of it and just keep a royalty or whatever. You know, it might have just been a decision taken because it made sense for the position the company was in. And they might have news coming that we didn't know about, and that was going to, they needed to dispose of this project or whatever. So,
one man's waste is another man's. What is it? One man's rubbish is another man's gold or something like that.
I must admit, just when you talk about that, so I mean, I like Aussie Gold Hunters. I watch it every Monday night. Obviously, that season's finished now, but there was a crew on there, and they were basically taking waste from a processing plant, whether it was just stuff lying round about. It was like full of bits of machinery and plastic and crap. And you looked at it, and the old boy, you always have an old, it's a father-son team in most of these Aussie Gold Hunter things. And the old boy looked at him and went, you paid $40,000 for, I'm going to say, let's say it was 4,000 tonnes of rubbish. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, you better bloody hope this turns up some gold. And they get ridiculous amounts of gold out of it. So they really? Get absolutely ridiculous amounts of gold. It was crazy.
Well, look, I mean, you know, it is a classic one. And there's business out there doing it. I mean, you know, over in Cyprus, they've got a huge European grant for cleaning up. So what they did is that they scooped the tailings pile back into the Limni pit. And now when it rains, you see all this natural leaching and blue pools of water and all of this sort of stuff. So there's money there now. I don't know whether this will be something Chesterfield explore further or not, but there's a huge grant there now to actually go get that tailings pile, process it, extract the copper, and then chuck the earth back. It's the same story down in Ireland. There's an area in Ireland where there's a huge European grant, and there's these spoils and tailing piles all over the place. So I think there's some, you know, there's money to be made from it. So, you know, hearing you sort of talking about this too just kind of triggered me to.
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't even as good as tailings or spoil dumps. It was like, say the machine or the processing plant had this massive breakdown and, you know, something just exploded, and it's just that whole batch of ore, whatever they were processing, is just taken out and dumped because it's contaminated with, you know, metal pieces or whatever, or you know, ball bearings or whatever. I don't know. And obviously they don't want to put it through the full system because it'll just wreck it. So they just must take this and just dump it. You know, and obviously you have breakdowns regularly, so they must do this, like, you know, 2 or 3 times, you know, a year or whatever, or 2 or 3 times a quarter. And over a period of 10, 15 years, there's this massive dump of shit, for want of a better term. And that's what it was. The whole processing plant was gone and it had been stripped down. There was nothing left bar this it wasn't even, as I say, tailings or spoil heap. It was just rubbish. And some of the things they were doing, there was a couple of bits of machinery left, and they were actually they were blown into every nook and cranny. They were blowing all the dust out, and they had this ball of, it just looked like dust. But see, once they got the pan into it, it's full of gold. You know, it's just, these guys are no daft. You know, they're not daft at all. And
where's the next gold nugget of opportunity? I know we talked about this last time, Kenny. I've subsequently seen that you're getting a little bit excitable in the stock market about yet another shell company having nailed Attis and one or two others. You've moved into Conduity. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. So what changed for you? I mean, it seems like you're a bit more interested in what's going on there.
Yeah, well, I had about 500,000 shares. It's probably been for 2 or 3 weeks, and I was just quite happy to let that kind of trundle along and see what happened. But I've noticed in the last 3 or 4 days, the volume's just starting to creep up, and it's all buys. Now, there's only 125 million shares in issue. Market cap is about 1.75 million. They just raised 1 million cash. You know, so I mean, the market dynamics or economics, whatever you want to call it, you know, it just seems a no-brainer. But it's not moving very much, you know, maybe a couple of percent a day. Obviously, the placing guys are quite happy to flip their 1 pence shares for sort of 1.4, which is fine. You know, it's a good return, 40%. But that's got to dry up at some point.
Well, I've looked at, look, I followed it, mate, and I think it, three quarters of that placement has probably been sold into the market, and there is an element of people who will be holding these, maybe two thirds. Maybe I'm being a bit unfair, but you know, from my perspective, and I think you're absolutely spot on. We're at that point where, eventually, you're at the point of saturation where there's just no more stock to come out. And soon as that buying, that trickling, that just generally keeps going on and on, that's where you're going to start seeing a decent move. And we've saw it with other things in the same space where they go up 2, 3, 4x. So they can't be discounted. There's not many shells out there. Anybody who doesn't know this company and the people involved, forget the existing legacy director, because he's there basically to make up the numbers. And it sounds outrageous, and I'm sure if he's listening to this, he'll be thinking, you bastard. But he was there. He was then involved in a failed company. The guy who came in, Nicholas Lee, came in with the cash from Peterhouse, who raised the money. They've had an amazing run of late, Peterhouse. I know there's a couple of brokers over there, Duncan, Lucy, Charles, and they've absolutely nailed it over the, you know, 2020, and more power to them. But, you know, Nick Lee, in his variety of different capacities, both at Pires Investment, RGO, and now this Conduity, he's going to be looking at deals day and night, because he's involved with RGO from financing companies. So he's going to be shown lots and lots of opportunities there. With Pires Investments, they've got lots of startups and new tech and everything else. So he'll be looking at lots of opportunities there. And he's no stranger to bringing companies to market. And we talked about that last time. He's got a load of different companies to market over the years. I would argue that given where this company is and his day-to-day life and activity and what he's done over the years, I've known Nick 10 years. I bet my bollocks to a barnyard door he does a deal in the tech space or somewhere tech related. And I don't think it'll be one of these pie-in-the-sky, bright idea type investments. I think it'll be something a little bit further along, bit more established, and something that people can get the teeth into. I think it's again, great opportunity for lots of different reasons. We talked about different companies today, but yeah. If you're speculative and you want to have a go at something on a small valuation and you can be patient, I mean, these are the things that can make big returns, and that's why I like to have a go at it myself. So that's my view, and I think you're on the money there, Kenny.
Yeah, well, I definitely, it's definitely. I mean, I put a tweet out this morning just to see. You know, I just put out a few bullets just to see what the appetite. I know you're well loved in the market, Doc, and you can get 100, but I mean that's quite a lot for me. But and the thing with investment, obviously it's a cash shell, so it's going to be potentially a reverse takeover. These reverse takeovers are happening quicker than they used to. Now, a good example would be Eris, which wasn't meant to be a reverse, but it ended up being one, and it only suspended for 10 days. I think a vast majority of the deal now is done before they announce the reverse takeover, whereas maybe a couple of years ago, they would announce a reverse takeover, and they would sit on it for months and months and months and months, and never to get fed up. But now I think that they've flipped it, and they've realised that, you know, let's do all the hard work on 90% of it before we announce it. Or in the case of
so what happens is with lots of these shells or these vehicles is they need to find an asset or an idea, and then they have to come to the market to get the money before they can start that process. But if you've already raised the money and you've got the money for the legal fees, the background checks, the due diligence and everything else, you can do exactly what you're referring to now. And that's what's going to happen with Conduity. And it's what you're referring to with the likes of maybe Attis or with Eris, is that people are actually doing the work ahead of making the announcement, and that's speeding the process up, and it's becoming fashionable again.
Yeah, definitely. And there's not too many of these guys about. I mean, I'm trying to think of them. I think is it Traf? I can't remember if that's is it Trafalgar. I've not really looked at it, but I think
they've had a bit of a nightmare recently because
there's debt involved. I mean, obviously, Conduity is debt free. You know, so
What's the attraction then, Kenny? What that it's a shell that is very cheap and it's presumably going to announce something.
Well, the story, just to step back, Mark, the story with Attis was, again, it was a shell. They were looking to do a deal. It was unloved. You know, you could buy a, I'm going to say it was 0.11, I think, at one point. And I bought a lot and sat on them and just was patient. And all of a sudden, they announced this deal where they were going to amalgamate, which is a new one in me. But anyway, basically, it's got a helium project. They're going to reverse in, and the shares never get suspended. So currently, they're trading about 100% up on that particular entry level, and they were a lot higher on that as well. So I mean, I sold my initial stake that I had, and I was also fortunate enough to be involved in the placing, so I've got another bite at the cherry. So yeah, it's all we do with the asset coming in and then what excitement it can create.
But so it's purely a speculative thing, because it could just stop rather than anything actually happen.
Well, look, the situation that's Attis Oil and Gas and a couple of other ones that have gone on of late is that they're already failed existing businesses that have been rebranded. So they've been known as, anyway, I won't dig too deep backly into it with those companies, but look, what happens is they've been failed, they've been rebranded, they've failed again, they've been rebranded, and they're looking to go again. I think if you've got new management with decent connections to cash. So I think ADV is one of the ones that Kenny's a fan of too. And the guy and you've had him on your podcast, that guy has got huge access to capital, hugely successful. So the chances of him taking the vehicle on, not paying himself a lot of money, he's got a huge amount of deal flow around him. So he's got big relationships in areas where he can find transactions that can go in, and loads of expertise and money. It's only a matter of time before something positive happens.
Okay.
In other cases, you'll get these shitty little businesses that suggest that they're now a cash shell, but the management doesn't change. The balance sheet's as thin as hell, and then they start to speculate on what they may or may not do. They're generally the ones that have the chance of going belly up. So I don't know if that helps you with your understanding, but you're looking for...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and where did you find them, Kenny? Are you just searching for like what low market cap companies and then looking into what's going on with them?
I think it's just because you're on Twitter all the time. You know, you see the tickers popping up. I think there is actually a search facility on ADVFN where you can get in and do these top lists, and you can filter down the market cap and cash shell. You can do it. You can do lots of different filters.
Because I know you like the lower end of the market, don't you? That's where you kind of dwell.
Well, I like off the radar, so I do. And you might need.
Well, listen, I've got one for you. I mean, if you want to talk about something that's had a change in management team, it's been, you know, hugely unloved for a long time. Been a bit of a car crash in the background, but now a new direction. Ascent Resources. So Ascent Resources, I don't know if you're aware of that one. Do you know much about it?
I've heard of it, but no, I don't know much about it.
So it's they had. Gas assets in,
Romania,
I think it was like Slovenia. They were selling some gas. They were looking to produce gas. They invested about 50 million euros into building a gas pipeline. And then they run into a bunch of problems. Now, this thing traded on a massive valuation historically, very liquid. It was a fan's favourite a number of years ago. And it hit the shits. They ended up in a legal dispute with the government, and the company ran out of money. Andy Denon went in there from Coro. Andy's been around a long time. Anybody who remembers him will remember him back from his funding and financing days at Darwin Strategic and a bunch of different companies too. So Andy's got access to capital. He's gone in there. He's taken his first role as CEO. So he's got a point to prove, because if he goes in there and makes a cock up of it, it's not going to bode well for him moving forward in his career as a executive director at PLC level. So he's taken this role on. Malky has actually joined the board from a advisory perspective and a non-exec. So they've got some assets over in Cuba. I think that definitely spikes the interest, given the fact that Biden is getting in charge in the US. So relationships with Cuba are allegedly going to change, and therefore there's a great potential opportunity just in the Cuban asset. But this is the point that's being missed. And I noticed my old spa, Richard Jennings at Align Research, is a definite Marmite character, and we like a good sparring argument at times too. But he's right behind this company, and the bit that the market's missed is they'd talked about how that this they were looking to escalate this legal situation with the government. But the first thing they have to do is, after they make that announcement, as the new company with the legal team, that we're going to go in and we're looking to make a claim, first thing they have to do is inform them, and then there's a 3-month cooling period to stop things, you know, getting carried away and out of control. Now, the interesting thing is that the company, there was a number of different articles and releases over in Slovenia. I always mix the two up, Slovakia and Slovenia. Over there, the press were coming out and they were talking about how that a settlement would be found. So I did a little bit of digging, asked a few questions, and it would appear that three cases that are similar to this, the government have settled on. They've got zero conversion rate of winning these cases, so they settled relatively early. And the company have come out and said that they're basically going to be sitting around the table and looking for a resolution or a way of resolving this situation. So I think all of those indicators are leading to one thing, and that is that the government are going to hold their hands up and say, okay, what do we need to do to put this right? They've put 50 million euros in there. You only need to see an RNS coming out to say a cent have been awarded 5 million, a cent have been awarded 10 million, a cent have been awarded a concession and the assets have been returned to them, whatever it might be. That thing goes absolutely off the chain. And I think that's what they're playing for. And all the hallmarks are there. It's worth having a look at. Okay. It's still a little bit early. They raised some money. They had some complexity when they raised the first bit of money. They had a broker who put some cash up. Then they didn't stump the money up. And there was a bit of I'll take me out to a cent. And the team there, they actually went to those investors and said, you're not getting away with it. You're going to pay. Just because the price has gone the opposite direction, you know, you're not making excuses. You're going to cough and off we go. And they did. And all the way through that period, there was a lot of turbulence and misunderstanding and people weren't quite sure what was going on. But over the last few weeks, there've been some real subtle messages from the company and out in country. If they get that deal, it's going to go up 3-4 times the multiple. If they don't, and they have to start the process of bringing in new assets and building the thing out and raising money, maybe it'll be a slower process. And of course, that's always the risk. And with that, you know, shares can go down as well as it can go up. But I think definitely over Christmas into the new year, keep your eye out for a cent.
Okay. Okay.
Very long-winded that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. That's fine. But no, there's definitely loads of opportunities out there. But as always, it's just getting time to sit down and have a look at these opportunities and do the level of research and investigation that you feel comfortable with. And everybody's different. I mean, some people just jump in the trade and based in 5 minutes research. Sometimes it's, you know, 5-6 hours, or it can be over a couple of days. So everybody's different. And I'm not saying the people that do 5 or 10 minutes are not successful. Yeah. Sometimes they just get their timing perfect. You know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than methodical. But generally it comes back.
Well, it's momentum, isn't it? You know what I mean? These guys are just looking for, you know, they're looking for a wave and they want to surf it and they know it's gonna crash and wipe out at some point, and they just want to get on it and off it before that happens.
Exactly.
And you know, good luck to them if that's the only way that you can make a turn in the market. You've got to play to your strengths and not to your weaknesses. So
yeah, I mean, the only thing I can relate to with that, and I've never really got involved with cash shells, but I suppose the closest I came was Nyota.
Oh yeah, that was a fucking disaster, that wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh no, I had some shares in that when it went under as well. You see, I remember thinking I was a clever fucker and you had some shares in it. It was not good, was it?
No, it wasn't good. And I got in and it was not good at all. It was my biggest loss at the time. I think I went quite heavy with it actually. I think I had like about $8,000 in it, and it was worth about $2,000. Then you started to get all these sort of new voices, if you like, talking about what's going to happen, and starts to get interesting. You can kind of see that, these guys are kind of just jumping on, you know, speculation and to ride the wave, like you say. But then one day, literally one day, it just started to go 20%, 40%, 60%. And I messaged another friend who was involved, and I was like, what the heck is going on with Nyota? This is mental. And it's like, I have no idea, but it could be the opportunity. And I just started selling them. And in the end, I sold everything, and I probably came out with a loss of about £1,500, which is obviously much better than, you know, what it was before. But it was, it moved on absolutely. There was nothing. Nothing material was ever announced. And then it went. Then it went, didn't it? It doesn't exist anymore. It's like, why did it move like that?
The shares a bit like Kenny. Kenny's got a portfolio of them, but I never confess my sins. But let me tell you, I've got a portfolio of shit, and the altar's in there for me.
So hang on. So that stays there. That will never disappear.
Well, no, I mean, obviously, so Noyota, believe it or not, you know, I still get some notifications. They're doing something in Australia, and there's an application here and there. And unless the company winds up and liquidates, if it goes private, they still exist. Some of these companies, they go under with a few hundred grand, half a bar, a million quid. I mean, that could pay somebody. I mean, somebody can justify a salary out of that for 2 or 3 years, saying, "Oh, they're just looking for another opportunity to resurrect it," and actually, all they're doing is they're just living the free life, the good life. You know,
so Noyota is still a trading business, but it's just not listed.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
I've still got three in my SIP. I had five, but two of them bizarrely disappeared a couple of weeks ago. I've got Maple Energy, and that was about 250,000 shares. That was worth about £30,000. So that I lost £30,000 in that in my SIP. Suspended. That was it, gone. I had Money Swap PLC. I've still got Rosendale Investments Limited.
Don't make us focus on all of the negatives. I've got a sick feeling in my stomach about Niolta, Kenny. Come on, don't put me.
But no, it's good to point out to say this is the shit that can happen. It can happen to you. And it's not as if it's a gradual, I can get my money out, but it's fine, I'll take a hit, I'll take a 30% loss. When it suspends, and you can pretty much tell by the suspension and the narrative it goes with it, whether it's terminal, you know, as soon as Maple suspended, I just went, that's it, it's gone.
Game over.
But you still have shares in the company, though.
Yeah, but, Mark, that was about 6-7 years ago, maybe more than that, you know, and I don't even know. You know, there's nothing you can do.
Mark can't get his head around this whole thing of you still own shares in a company, but they're not worth anything. How can they be worthless? You can't quite get your head around
I can't quite understand, because if they're still there, it means you still have shares in them. I get that they're not on the market, so you can't trade them, but do you not still hold shares in the company you could own?
Yeah, you do, but what happens, and this is exactly, in any of these companies that go off for any length of time and then come back, this is what happens. There's a billion shares in issue when it goes off, and there's a few hundred grand. And what will happen is the directors of the company that stay on will stay on until all of that money's gone. And then they'll go and either raise some money, but nobody will really want to fund it. Mm. Or they'll say, we'll put some of our money back in. So they'll take all of the money out in fees. And then what they'll do is they'll go and identify an asset that is the next best thing. And they'll say, right, okay, we're going to vend this asset in, but we're going to then put our money back in. But they then dilute you into oblivion. Mm. So they do 100-to-1 share consolidation, which means instead of having a billion shares in issue, you've got, you know, a 10 million. Mm. And then they'll go and issue another new bunch of shares, maybe 40 million shares on a valuation of whatever. And then by the time it comes back, your £1,000 when it's suspended with a billion shares in issue, even though it comes back with 100 million shares in issue or 50 million shares in issue, your £1,000 worth about £1.20. So it doesn't matter. Even if it's sitting there and it shows that it's worth £1,000 on your balance sheet, you can absolutely guarantee by the time these things come back, they've gone through capital restructure, and it's never ever going to be to the benefit of the legacy shareholders. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the new guys that are vending their business in, they don't give a shit about the old business. That's nothing to do with us. We don't want the value of our business to be impacted by those people. So the best we'll do is let 5 or 10% of the old company in last valuation go to them, and we're taking the rest. So they have to make it work, and that's why. So it does, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, what about any other things that you're looking at? I mean, I've got a couple of things that I think are quite interesting.
Go on,
I mean, we talked
Get off your chest. Go on.
Well, no, it's not on my chest because, look, we talked about arena events on one of the ones that we did. And, you know, we talked about how when the boxer, I think it was on the podcast, they did the boxing over in the Middle East, where Joshua fought the Mexican guy and got filled in. And this company, Arena Events, they do all of these, so the PGA and all of these different events. And there was a bid for the company at about 20p. It got rejected. COVID come, shares collapsed. They raised money at 10p. The Arabs come and took 28% of the company. Shares went down again, 4 or 5p. There was 12 and a half, 13p this week. So again, there was the opportunity. And I think, you know, it's not, you know, I'm not here to sort of just kind of gloat to people, but if you've got some conviction, I mean, there was a couple of guys on Twitter, Riddler was one of them, who was giving it the big and about it too. Absolutely right to do so. Had you have held through all of that turbulent time over summer, you'd have doubled your money quite easy on Arena Events. Where it goes from here, I don't know, but I think there's good opportunities and bad. So yeah, there's one.
Okay.
Remote monitoring systems. Anybody been following that story? I've not been popular on that one.
No, I've not heard of that.
Yeah, I know that. I know roughly the story. But no, I've stayed away from it.
Okay.
Well, mate, is it worth commenting, or will you be getting lined up and shot if I mention it?
Oh, you can talk about it. No, you can go on, go for it. Why not? There's no point in sitting on the nice side of the fence, you know. If there's something to be said, just say it.
Well, yeah. I think the damage has been done. So the shares opened, I think it was 2 weeks ago. I sort of commented on how the valuation of this company was absurd. The business had been very, very, very active in social media, talking about their opportunities with their new 5-layered disposable mask that they'd managed to engineer and were going to sell. And it was going to revolutionize people's safety, because the copper component within the mask would prevent anybody from contracting or the virus living within this mask for at least 7 hours in the tests that were done. The doctor, Gareth Cave, was all over the ITV News and BBC, the Daily Mail, talking about it. And they've never sold a mask. They don't generate any revenue, but the market cap was up at, I think, 75 million. So I'd sort of suggested there's going to be a continuation. There always is when you have a strong finish. But the reason that the price is going up is because the doctors put out a tweet in social media that alluded to a transaction that was going to happen and then deleted it. Now, lo and behold, on the Monday, they announced the deal. So, of course, they had to confess it. The mistake he made is he went on to and did an interview with ShareTalk, and he said the transaction was completed on the weekend. Well, if the transaction had completed on the weekend, how did he know to tweet about it on the Friday? And there then started to highlight that Mr. K perhaps had been a little bit disingenuous, or most certainly shouldn't have been tweeting about a material event that had taken place. So I piped up, as I do, and mentioned all of this. Doesn't look great. Something isn't quite right. Shares have ended up now, I think, at 2p today. And investors, unfortunately, are extremely unhappy with me, because they think, you know, I somehow are the, you know, the antichrist in the market that dictates pricing. When in actual fact, all I'm doing is observing and saying, look, this is what's happened and this is what's happening. And, you know, you need to be able to play the game. So there's been a lot of hate. I think I had somebody report me to the police, or numerous people really? Report me to the police because the comments had made. And I think one or two people had made a couple of threats to me. They're going to beat me up or whatever. Given I've got thick skin and I can look after myself, I don't really worry about, you know, shenanigans like that. And as for phoning the police, that's pathetic.
Yeah, interesting phoning the police. Yeah,
yeah, phoning the police. It was almost, if he doesn't shut up, we're going to have to phone the police just to shut him up. Anyway, lo and behold, the Daily Times, brilliant. I've got to take me out after the Times. We're brave. They've obviously looked at what's going on. There's a lot of interest around that. So I'm sure there'll be some interest on the podcast today for the comment to make. The Times put out an article that basically said, well, the directors, the investors, major investors, and the former directors of the company all sold their shares. The chairman dumped all of his shares. So literally, the private investors have bought all of the shares from the directors. And here's the painful thing. The painful thing is not that shareholders have lost lots of cash. that story. They've seen the momentum, they saw the volume, they saw the spike, they believed the story, whatever it is, that was their choice. But there's no wealth distribution, boys. So what we normally see in companies like Power Metal goes up by 5 times the multiple. Some of that money trickles down into other companies. You go and look at something like ECR or any of these companies, whether it be Novacyt, whether it be Avacta in the COVID space, these things have gone up 5, 10, 50 times. If investors have turned £1,000 into 50, they'll go out and buy £5,000 in another company. And so it's wealth distribution. What we've got here, it's a total disaster because the directors have basically scooped all the money out and they've got it in the pocket. So there's no wealth distribution. That means that in the junior markets, there's going to be less money for these things. Liquidity has already visibly started to dry up and it's not great. If it's any consolation, things don't go up in a straight line and they don't go down in a straight line. So I'm sure there'll be a rebound that people will say, you know, fuck you, Doc Holliday. It's gone up from 1.5 or 2p to 3. Mm. Ultimately, a company that has nothing, produces nothing, and it's going nowhere, it's not going to be worth 50 million or 100 million as long as I've got a hole in my heart.
That's reminded anyway. Me. I did see something on that where people were saying that it was the headline, yeah, that caused it to crash or whatever, and you're picking up on that.
So I think what Doc's saying here, there's no virtuous circle. The directors have taken that money out of the circle, and the head's not feeding the tail. So yeah, that's a vicious circle, I think we'd call it.
I mean, look, you know what I would say is if I was sitting there and I'm listening to the podcast and I'm massively underwater, and you know all these guys seem really negative on it, so should be selling. All I want to do now is say, do not buy or sell shares based on what you're hearing. It's opinion. I believe, even though I think that company will potentially produce a mask, will get some sales, if I've run the numbers and it isn't going to be anything like the expectation that have been created in the market, it's been a deliberate and orchestrated drive by certain people in these chat groups on Telegram, etc., to create an expectation that the company simply can't meet. Mm. And it's got ahead of itself. The directors are sending a clear message out by selling their shares. They can't come out and say that we don't. The company's a load of rubbish. They're the directors. What they can do is they can sell shares to show, look, we think it's overvalued. You shouldn't be buying these. But there will be a rebound because of that. The interest that's happened around that company. There'll always be another second wave up. There'll be another go at it. So if you're sitting there, you're underwater and you're feeling like absolutely pissed off. And you can take a bit more pain, you'll probably find that there's going to be that Noyota moment that you talked about before, Mark, where you'll get your exit, you'll get a chance out, and you've just got to not get sucked into the emotional side of things and just take your exit when you get it. If you get, you know, given a door out of these situations before they go to rapture.
Right. Well, there we go.
Another hour has come and gone. I think
has come and gone.
Yeah. I think this will be a good time to draw a line under it for this Friday anyway, Doc.
I was just getting warmed up. I thought we were going to talk about three or four other companies.
No, we can do more, but I'm scribbling more down because you mentioned Telegram and we're going to clash in that. We'll do a podcast. The next podcast, we'll have a discussion about Telegram.
Yes, I know you love Telegram. I know that. I'm aware of it too. All I'm saying is it can be used for good and for bad, you know, Kenny.
Yeah, so yeah.
That's all it is.
No, we can have a balanced discussion about it. I'm not going to disagree with some of the points that you'll bring up because I do agree with them. But there's also two sides to a coin. But someone will get some
Before
ideas.
We go, is there any opportunity to just flagging up one or two things that I think are worth noting before we go?
Sure.
Go for it.
So there was an IPO, and I'll hold my hands up. I didn't participate, and I was wrong, in a company called Christos PLC. It was the new Andrew Austin vehicle. I believe that it will do very well, and I maintain that belief, even though I didn't participate. So you may ask, why didn't you participate in the IPO? And simply, I thought that there might be a little bit of indigestion around the open. There's always troublesome days around some of these IPOs, and you can often buy them, unless you're buying them big size, you can buy them just under the IPO price. So I was trying to be a bit clever. Well, I got it wrong, and there's been a great deal of support for it. There's a lot of interest. Andrew Austin's made investors a fortune with Rockrose Energy, and they've all come back to market and backed them again. It's up 20% already. So I think, you know, there's a huge group of investors out there, you know, Barron Trading, James Lawson. There's a whole bunch of really astute guys who know what they're doing in the market, and they've had a go at it. So, you know, all I wanted to do is sort of say, sometimes you can kick a gift horse in the mouth, and I definitely have done with that one. But congratulations to those that took it, and okay, more power to them.
Good, good. Just briefly from me, seeing as it's topical today, did we mention Myriad? Did I talk about Myriad advertising last time? Do you remember?
Product placing.
Yeah,
right?
It's the product placing. Yeah, I've talked about it with someone. Well, briefly, okay, quickly. It's product placing in films and documentaries. And it will take a logo of a company, the technology, and it will superimpose the logo, whether it's, you know, RAB for, you know, a jacket, or, you know, TOG24 or whatever. So it actually places the product on the actor's clothing, for example, in the movie. And it's also targeted using data that's around from you know, advertising data, so that actually what I might see when I'm watching the film will be different from what you see, Doc. You might see a different brand to what I see, but on the same item of clothing or on the same kitchen table or whatever.
Wow.
Very,
wow.
Very clever technology. And I've been trying to get them on the Market Musings podcast, but they're quite busy. And today they have announced placing to 23 million. Yeah, which is huge, and then not so long before they announced they'd signed a deal with one of the biggest online streamers in the USA. So it's Disney or Netflix, isn't it? So, you know, they're going places. I think, and if you're into tech,
I've not heard of that one. So
oh, we mustn't have mentioned it last time. Sorry, I know. Maybe I talked to Kenny about it, because I've definitely told the story to someone else. But yeah, I think it's worth a look. If you'd bought earlier in the year, you'd be up 7 times already. You know, I think it was about 6p in.
So is this a bit similar to Bidstack, that company? Where
yeah,
they do, like,
so Bidstack do it in games, don't they? Yeah, yeah, they do the same thing, but in games. Yeah, it is similar, but it's in television and movies, product placement. Yeah, very, very clever. Very. I don't know how it works. It must be so clever, because if actors are moving around on a boat, how they track, you know, tracking points to superimpose a logo on an item that's bouncing around is really quite remarkable, certainly from my point of view. But yeah, it's just come out today, that news, and it's.
We need you to find the next one that's going to go 7 times.
Yeah, I need to get in before, don't I? Yeah. But that's what I was going to mention from me. Yeah, it looks quite good. But yeah.
So Kenny's, now we know Kenny's busting for a piss. We need to keep him talking.
He probably is. Yeah, he probably is, isn't he? Yeah, but he's not allowed beer, is he? It must be awful for him. You know, I might crack
he's
one out.
He's not allowed it. He's not allowed beer. Sit in the corner, Kenneth. And just
going out for my daily walk. That's my next move.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah. I don't get it. It's a bit like a prison cell, this laptop. You know, you get 1 hour a day and you've got to squeeze in everything in an hour.
When the gold price starts going back up again, because the world, all of that uncertainty has not just disappeared. When that gold price goes, there's the dog barking. When the gold price goes back up, we can tune into ECR and a few other things, eh?
Yeah, definitely.
But all right, good stuff. Well, like I say, that was an hour and it just flew by. So yeah, we must be getting better at this. And nobody's failing at each other, so that's good. But I'm sure that'll come, especially when we talk about Telegram next time. I'm only kidding. Right.
Great.
Appreciate it, team.
It's a load of rubbish and it's a waste of time. If people have to spend the days on Telegram, there's something very missing in the life, and I'm leaving that with you so I can get you revved up for the next time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll get my food all out.
Thanks a lot, Doc. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, it was good.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.